Hello, my name is Joseph Cadigan, and you're listening to Midwest Screamo, a podcast where I interview members of the Midwestern Scrams, hardcore, and punk community. Today I'm joined by Chris Nelson, a member of the Circle City Power Violence band LIB, which stands for Life is Beautiful. Chris, how's it going?
Going great today. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well, doing well. I'd like to start off by just asking, you know, what bands from the Midwest scene have you been listening to lately?
There have been a few really cool bands that we've been lucky enough to play with recently that have definitely been a really cool experience to listen to and then, you know, watch and perform. We played a couple shows recently with a band called Snuff from Chicago. Great band. And their performance is always just 100%. I love that band. And fun people to be around too.
Yeah.
Cracking jokes with them. Had a couple dates, one in India and then one in Chicago with them. And really enjoy that band. We played with them previously, maybe all coming up on 2 years now, in winter of 2020 when we were on tour with a band called No Question. Mm-hmm. Another sick band from Madison, Wisconsin. They haven't been as active, but they're now playing shows again too. Definitely love all of those people. And we played with this really sick grind band called Knoll from Murfreesboro and Memphis. I think they're all kind of that area of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. They were insane. Definitely like different than anything in the like fast, noisy stuff happening at the moment.
Yeah,
and just,
yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, I got a couple friends that are starting a grindcore band right now, and
nice.
I'm really excited to see that scene kind of forming in the Midwest again.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure you said Snuff, the last guest, Drew from Prevention, is in another band. I believe it's called Hemlock, and I think they're playing a show with Snuff. A cool tie-in.
Probably. They're Chicago folks. I think they're playing with Gag here very soon.
Oh, sick.
It's going to be a crazy show that I'd maybe take a trip up there for, but it's a bit of a drive.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's get started with some questions about the band. When and how did LIB form, and what do you do in the band?
I am the guitar player, and I do a lot of writing stuff, but I guess we all really write. We're all very collaborative with that process, but we kind of started it because members, are pretty much everyone else in the band, had previously been playing in other bands, and those bands were dissolving. I was playing bass in a punk band at the time. This is like 2018, about this time of year, fall 2018. And I had played it guitar in bands previously. I was missing playing guitar, so I think I was made a post or something about like, hey, I really want to play in like a 90s style hardcore band, want to play guitar doing that. And the rest of the guys were like, yeah, we're freshly out of bands, we were actually talking about doing something, and we got talking about doing that and set up a practice. And I think we wrote like two songs in the first practice, and it just ended up gelling really well, and we just kept going, didn't stop.
Yeah, that's sick. So the band's been around for 3 years now ish
yeah, just about 3 years.
Awesome. The band's first single, Self-Aggrandizing, from the forthcoming LP Men's Health on Convulse Records, dropped in late September. What can fans expect from the new record?
This one is definitely going to be different from the last two demos, EPs, much more diverse. We go 100% power violence, then we also go the opposite direction, with just keeping it spooky, creepy, and then having mosh parts throughout.
Yeah, and you know, not to out myself here, but I have listened to the new LP. It fucking rips.
Thank you.
And, you know, I think the part that like caught my ear the most, like the moment I really sat forward is on one of the songs. There's a guitar solo, and I was not prepared for it, and it sounds great. Like, just the tone of the guitar and like the playing is so tight. I'm really excited for other people to hear this, because
it's that was a weird choice, but also I mean, we as a band like to joke around, and we don't take anything too seriously, so like putting a crazy thrash solo in a song was like, it's a joke. Like, I mean, our band is called Life is Beautiful, and we talk about really awful stuff lyrically, our vocalist does. So like there's a lot of tongue-in-cheek jokes, stuff like that, but still it was fun to do a thrash solo.
Oh yeah, no, and it sounds great. How many songs are on the LP again?
Just 10 songs.
Just 10.
We had it's kind of an LP, but it's gonna be a one-sided LP. Mm-hmm. They're all, you know, fast songs ranging from 10 seconds to 2 minutes. So
classic power violence move.
Yeah.
the previous release, Death is Expected, is over 2 years old now. How's your writing process and recording process changed since the last EP?
That's always weird to think about, because it still feels like that's new in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But I think the writing process is kind of stayed the same. We all kind of come to the table with an idea that we all agree on, and then just work on that collaboratively. So the writing's kind of been the same. We kind of now bounce things back and forth. During the pandemic, we had to. So some songs were written, the drums were written first, and then I wrote everything to what our drummer had written. And that was different, but recording wise, we've always used every record's been a different engineer, all of which have been our friends and different to work with in different ways. For these songs, we really wanted it to be cleaner than Death is Expected. We wanted that one to be awful sounding and rough.
Dirty.
And we did that. Yeah. And like, so we did that, and now we're doing the exact opposite of that. And I think the song's kind of like had to be done this way. Yeah. Otherwise, if we had overdone the dirtiness to the production, it wouldn't have translated. So, and who knows what we'll do on the next one. It's always fun to just change it up immediately.
Yeah, I think another part of the record that really stood out to me is how high quality the production is. I mean, it sounds like really, really clean and just pleasing to listen to, which is a weird way to describe a PV album, but you know.
Thanks.
I really enjoyed it. Where did you guys record it?
We recorded this with our friend Matt Riefler in his house, in his basement. So we drove up there and spent a solid 3 days. Like, we blocked out 3 days out of all of our schedules and got out of town and stayed at his place, did everything. I think we did all drums the first night, then guitar and bass the second day, and then vocals the third day. So it was cool to do that and have a kind of studio experience, because normally doing these types of bands, you don't do that. You knock everything out in your friend's garage or you know, wherever, same day, and it's done. But we really spent a good amount of time at that place with him, and his style and everything, just his proficiency, has made it such a good experience that ended up turning out really clean, and really like it.
Yeah. Did he mix the record as well?
Yeah. Mixed, mastered everything. Since it's going to be vinyl, he did like a separate, for that.
Yeah.
Separate master for that. And then what's going to be streaming is going to be a little bit different. So he did the whole nine yards.
A little louder for streaming, I'm assuming.
Yeah. I don't know the mastering engineering side of things. There's weird compression and EQ things that you need to do differently, I guess. So
actually, my background's in mastering.
Oh really?
Nerdy about that stuff. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Speaking of nerdiness, though, you've described yourself as a bit of a gear nerd before. What do you think the most important equipment for the LIB sound is?
That's really tough to say. really tough to say. I'm huge, definitely a huge gear nerd, and that's also what I do for a job. I work for an online retailer. I'm not going to say who unless they pay me to.
no free ads.
Yeah, no free plugs for them. But yeah, I work for an online retailer selling stuff, so I have to know it, and it's just you know, my hobby too. I was really specific about a lot of guitar gear in other bands I'd done, and starting LIB, I kind of didn't want to rely on hyper specific vintage tube amps that were made between, you know, this year and this serial number and all that. So I tried to choose gear that was more like, if it goes down, if it, you know, if I have to borrow someone else's, I can do it, and it doesn't, you know, change the sound of the band at all. So I'd say that the one piece of gear for me, at least, because we always borrow cabs, borrow backline, things like that. The most consistent piece for me is probably my SGs. That's the most comfortable instrument for me. I have like the specific pickups and the control layout fits to my body well. It's light, it's not a Les Paul. Like, that's probably the most essential piece of gear for me. But really, the sound is definitely kind of based on what the members are doing together. That's what I really like about this band too, is it's the most collaborative effort I've ever been a part of. More often than not, I've kind of had to lead structuring and writing and stuff like that. But everyone in this band, like, their input makes the sound of it. And that's what's, I can never tell how a song is going to go until it just gets thrown into the mix of everyone.
Yeah. What kind of pedals are you using typically?
Right now, the pedals always change too. Like, I'm changing that up. When I started doing LIB, I guess my amp's really important too. I play a Marshall JMP 2203 from 1980, and that's kind of just like the baseline. That's just, you know, AC/DC rock and roll sound. And then I boost it with whatever pedal I choose at the time. The beginning, I was using an SD1 from Boss, just the cheap yellow, normal ass pedal that you can just plug into any amp and boost it, and it sounds good. But I've switched to using a Proco Rat now that's been modified. I bought from a guy I used to work with that he modified himself. He's a pedal builder. It's got the 308 chip and all that. That's the geeky stuff in that one. That's what I used on this last record. The previous two records were all SD1 into the 2203 and the SGs. That was pretty much the sound for those. But now I can't get away from using the Rat. Yeah. I also used an HM2 clone recently. There's like a HM2 tone stack type pedal by Gun Effects.
You mean your tone's not a metal zone?
I mean, I'll try it. I'll try anything. I might need to try that next instead of the Proco Rat.
Yeah. Oh, I love the Rat. I've recorded a few tracks using it, and every time it's very responsive to how you play, which I appreciate. And is it a distortion pedal or is it overdrive?
It can do everything, and almost even into fuzz too. Once you start pushing that filter up. I really like using the SG or the Les Paul style pickup situation, switching to the neck pickup, rolling it back to clean it up. And the Rat does that so much better than most other drive pedals I've used.
Yeah.
Like, I can still do the clean parts that I do on the like spooky sounding songs and the delay on it. And I can just leave it on all the time and it does it.
Yeah.
Whereas some haven't as well.
And that Gibson and Marshall combo is a classic Scrams combo.
Oh yeah.
What bands would you consider influences for LIB, or more specifically your guitar parts?
I'd say for my guitar ports, the most, I think as a band as a whole, I would say bands like Ceremony, Early Ceremony, of course. And I mean, I still love the new stuff too, but doesn't really inform our writing at the moment. Spaz, all of their, just the approach and kind of like the ethos of that band too. It's like, don't take it too seriously. It's, we'll make some goofball fast songs, and that's that. Guitar playing wise, those bands definitely for me as well. Insect Warfare, grind band, they inform a lot of my riffs. Probably one of my favorite bands of all time. And yeah, that those are the biggest influence, I'd say.
Sick.
To how we sound.
Yeah. And you've been around in the screamo scene for a couple of years now, right? What was the project you were in before?
I've done quite a few lesser known screamo bands, some more than others. Before doing LIB, Dustin, our bass player, and I did a couple of screamo bands together. One was called Grief Seeds. Short-lived, we did for like maybe a year and a half, but put out like two EPs. We recorded them in Bloomington with Mike at Russian Recording.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
so that was a really fun experience. I've previously had interned there years and years ago, so I'd known the place. I really liked it. Before that, Dustin and I also done a band called Wounded Knee. He was in it for like the last tour, but I had done it since 2013. I joined that band and did a lot of touring with that band. Met a lot of really cool people. Still know a lot of people that I met from that time, and still go and see them, like Brett Ray in Chicago. He's in a band, does a band called Midwest Lust. It's kind of like a power violence and noise type band. He also does a fest in Chicago called Dreary North Fest. Awesome dude. Met him through touring with that band, and did a lot of really cool stuff with that. That was feels like a long time ago.
Yeah. I mean, I think the lifespan of most screamo bands makes time seem to pass faster.
Definitely.
Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about influences, but what about non-music influences? Do you find that things that you're reading or watching or whatever it may be kind of play into the way you play? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say that's true for all the members of the band as well. Mm-hmm. I remember we all get together every now and then, watch movies together. The rest of the band are big cinephiles or big movie geeks. Mm-hmm. I enjoy movies. I can enjoy a bad movie. If they recommend it to me, I probably like it. So there'd be days we'd watch The Lighthouse together.
Nice.
We like a lot of horror, a lot of spooky stuff, a lot of all sorts of different stuff. We watched this independent film called Begotten. It's very tough.
I don't think I've heard of that before.
It's an art film from like 1990, I want to say. A guy just did it for a college project, if I remember right. It's all shot on black and white film. It's like taking a eraser head and making you even more uncomfortable. Like it's rough, but things like that, I'd say, influenced vibes that we want to bring to the band, the darkness and things like that. Like like that. Also, Berserk is a huge.
Oh, yeah.
Our bass player and I, Dustin and I, really like Berserk. I really like manga anime that's got that dark edge to it. That's spooky and just unsettling. I got really into Gantz recently. Like in the last couple of days.
Yeah. I haven't seen that one yet. It's always in my recommended.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, especially the CGI movie is a great way to start.
Okay, I'll check it out then. In the vein of kind of dark anime, I know you're a big fan of Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Absolutely,
I also am. Yep. I thought we could talk about it a little bit. When Definitely. Did you first see the show, and how did it affect you?
I think I saw it. I was working at home at the time in 2015, and I was like watching. I started watching it on my lunch breaks, just online, and it definitely affected me in a big way. Like, I was 2015. I was 24 years old. I don't know. It almost gave me like watching the last episodes and watching the movie had the biggest impact on me. A lot of like existential sort of questioning and things like that. I don't want to say it 100%, but I shortly thereafter developed an anxiety and panic disorder. So it maybe wasn't 100% that. Maybe that's just genes, but it's like putting those two together at the same time. I was like, man, that did this show just really give me a mental illness of how heavy it is?
Yeah, I think that was the first anime for sure that I watched that I was like, oh, like anime can be like an art form and like make a statement on life and not just be, you know, like battle scenes.
They still do that real well.
The battle scenes in Eva are fucking great. And you know, I don't obviously it didn't like create the mech genre or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I think it did a really good job of kind of advancing the mech genre away from the like purely action focused type stuff. And NGE is a show focused on, you know, critiquing hollow escapism in everyday life. You want to talk about panic attacks at like that kind of reaction to like facing the negativity in our life is pretty common, I think. And I really feel like for a show approaching 30 years old, its message like is still incredibly relevant. What's your philosophy on staying truly connected to all experiences in life, whether they're positive or negative?
I definitely had to like start thinking about things a little bit differently at about that same time in my life. I started getting really into meditation and yoga right around that time too, because when you have a panic disorder, it's an easy way to cope is to learn meditation. So I think mindfulness techniques, meditation and things like that help me stay attached to the real world. While it is still very tempting to dig into that escapism and just kind of zone out, you know, I still do it. Like I'm sure a lot of us still do, you know, you get sucked into a TV show or a series or, you know, just zone out and stay away from what's really going on. It's something like that is a healthy way to just get back to being normal. I think going out in the woods too is really important. I grew up not far from where you're at. I grew up in Brown County out in the woods. So my parents live out in the woods, and like going out to Brown County, you know, the parks or just getting out in the woods is a good palate cleanser after you've kind of been shutting yourself off from the world.
Yeah, I was actually just out in Brown County like 2 weeks ago.
Awesome.
It's a beautiful place. I highly recommend all Scrams fans spend more time in the woods. go to a state or national park, please. I think that like the pandemic had a really I mean, obviously it affected everyone in a pretty extreme way, but specifically on like my tendency to value escapism and to, I think I watched like 20 or 30 shows in like the first 6 months of and it was just because like that was how I was coping with, you know, like not being able to see my friends anymore and in person at least and all that. If you feel comfortable talking about it, how did you respond when things, you know, shut down?
I don't know, at the time everything shut down initially. I was living with my girlfriend. I was living with her in a studio apartment now with a cat. So like we were suddenly always around each other, which was good. And then also, you know, that can be stressful too when you're not used to being around someone that much, let alone, I mean, I'm just used to being alone for a period of time, doing work, things like that. So it was difficult in a lot of different ways. Somewhere in there, she got her own place and things kind of were, I mean, I always had her as a you know, partner and someone to be around. So I didn't really get the loneliness, as much. And I would still be in touch with everyone through the internet. So I didn't feel like I was missing out socially too much. But it definitely started, I started getting the cabin fever feeling of like, I am just tired of being in my place.
Yeah. Seeing the same walls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think what really made me realize what I was doing to cope with the changes in our way of life was I rewatched Evangelion and I was like, oh, this is exactly what's going on in my life right now.
I think actually watched it during that. My girlfriend and I did.
Sick.
She saw it the first time then.
I think it's one of like my favorite shows because of how rewatchable it is.
Yeah. You
know? It's not very long for listeners who don't know. It's 24 episodes, I think.
Yeah, around there. It's the perfect length, like Bebop. Like
yeah, exactly. Length. Exactly. And originally when the series ended, I'm blanking on the director's name, but
Hideki Anno.
Yes. Anno ended the show with a pretty positive tone overall. And a lot of viewers at the time, I mean, the show aired in like, I think the ending was in 98. Viewers at the time were pretty unhappy with that, just given the lead up to that, because it was pretty dark up to that point. And so they made a movie, End of Evangelion, to replace the show ending, and it's, you know, significantly darker. Which do you prefer, the original ending or the End of Evangelion movie ending?
The movie, for sure.
Yeah.
And like I said, I watched all of these, I kind of binged them in this period of time, back to back. And then as soon as I watched those last episodes, I was like, this doesn't seem right. This isn't the end. But the place I was streaming also had the movie. So I was like, okay, just watch that. And then I read a quick article and like, oh, okay, this takes place during these episodes. This is what's actually happening. And I think the movie is what had that big effect on me, is seeing the devastation of instrumentality and all of it happening. The scene with the white ones in Asuka. That was like seeing that and then kind of digesting the message of everything that's happening was what gave me that sort of at Impact.
Yeah. Oh, some listeners are not going to get that, but that was a good joke.
Thanks. I crack some cheesy ones every now and then. But I went into this too, like, I had previously watched Mobile Suit Gundams. Like, I've been a Mobile Suit Gundam fan for most of my life. I started watching that when I was like 8 years old. And I just finished Zeta Gundam. So also pretty dark for, I mean, Mobile Suit Gundam, the initial is also kind of, there's a lot of like rough war-based drama and things like that. But in the end, everyone ends up okay. And like the hero wins and things like that happen. And that's what I was thinking going into Evangelion. And then shortly halfway through, like, yep, this is nothing like that.
Nope. No, Shinji, not going to be happy.
No, not a hero ish. It's different.
I mean, and part of it too, is like, and a good part of this show is it acknowledges the reality that these are children that this is happening to. And I think a lot of anime kind of gets disconnected from that. Sometimes you see these kids who are making these really tough moral decisions, and like kids do not have that processing ability, and through no fault of their own, you know. And so even though, like, you know, Shinji is pretty whiny, I think that's a much more accurate representation of like what happens when you put that kind of responsibility on like someone who hasn't even gone through the process of like realizing who they are yet, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And that's not common for, I mean, young adults too. Young adults don't really come into knowing who they are as a person, or knowing their friend groups or where they belong, sometimes until, you know, mid-20s anymore. So to see that happen and also kind of experience that in real life was, that's what makes it heavy, is to give that human experience of, this is also happening to you, and will happen to you too. So.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite character in the show?
Favorite character? I change every now and then. Have you watched the rebuilds?
I have not.
Okay. I won't spoil anything for you. But they're still a lot of fun. Great. Yeah. The original and the movie is the best, but they're worth watch. Originally, my favorite character was Asuka. But now after the rebuilds, Misato has become my favorite.
I was actually, I was playing a board game. I'm not going to be able to remember what it's called, but one of the caveats of the board game is like, if you answer a trivia question wrong, you have to answer a question, from the group you're playing with. And the, I got a question wrong, and, what I had to answer is what animated character are you most attracted to, which was a wonderful question to be asked in front of my partner. And my mind went completely blank because, you know, what do you say to that? So I went with the classic Misato answer.
Misato's best girl.
Yeah, of course. Are the do you know where the rebuilds are streaming?
I think they're, I watched the last one that just came out on Prime.
Okay, cool.
I think they're all on Prime now.
Yeah. And that's the new movie, right? Like 3 or whatever.
Yeah. I think there's 3 or 4 of them. I forget. I have to go back and watch those.
Well, I remember it came out in Japan, like significantly before it came out here. And I remember when it was released in Japan, people were, you know, like, oh, don't spoil the movie for like other audiences or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I just saw nothing about it after that. I probably muted something and then forgot to unmute it. And yeah, I never got around to watching it. So thanks for the recommendation. I'll check it out.
They're worth it. Just the animation fights alone. Like they just kind of take that and really run with that.
Sick. Yeah. Well, I've loved talking to you about this show, but getting back to the band, sure. What shows does the band have coming up?
We are playing a show with this band called Capra in a couple days from today. I'm not sure when this podcast will be out, but it's going to be Thursday, the 28th, I believe.
Yeah. I might have this out on Thursday.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So if you're listening to this on Thursday, there's a show at Black Circle, LIB's playing in Indianapolis. That's the next show. Let's see, I have to look at the calendar. We play in a basement down the road from here in Indianapolis, November 18th, with a band called Slut Bomb from Cincinnati. Mm-hmm.
They'll be on tour. I love Slut Bomb.
Real excited to see them. I've been hearing about them since going on tour and playing Chicago and Kansas City. People had mentioned them. So excited to see them and play with them November 18th. Then after that, we have a bit of a gap till December 4th. We're going to go play a fest in Michigan called Sweat Fest. Antidote is playing. That's going to be sick to see them. I believe they're going to be through here shortly after that as well. I'm not 100% certain on the details of that, but Sweat Fest is December 4th in Grand Rapids.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds great. And the show at Black Circle, I'm trying to get some of my friends together and we might be up there for that. So
awesome. Hell yeah.
Yeah, it should be fun. Fun fact, Black Circle was started by my cousin, I guess. I didn't know that. Yeah, yeah. So I got to see Sleep there a couple years ago.
And, nice. I remember when that happened.
Yeah, that was sick. yeah, so what's your favorite show that LIB has played so far?
Favorite show? This is going back a ways. This is almost like 2 years ago. We played at the place where we get our merch printed in Bloomington at In Case of Emergency Press. Yeah. Love those folks. They've always been really great to us as far as getting us our merch and doing it really well. Mm-hmm. But then they started doing shows. And my buddy Steve, who plays in this black metal band called Truce,
mm-hmm. They're playing here on Saturday, and I'm going to be there.
Yeah, that's going to be a cool show. I wish I could make it down for that, but I'm not sure I will be able to. Great band as well. He put on the show, and it was like one of the best reactions to a set that we've played. So that was probably my favorite. Like, there are kids standing on printing equipment and then like jumping off onto each other and stuff. It was awesome. It was a really cool show.
Yeah.
That was probably my favorite.
I don't think they've hosted anything since the pandemic. But I hope things are safe enough soon that they feel comfortable doing that again. Cause I'd really like to go to a show there.
Yeah. It's a cool space.
I just moved down to Bloomington when they started doing shows. And then by the time I started going to stuff here, the quarantine started like probably 2 or 3 months after. So that was disappointing. But I'm sure they'll do stuff soon. And Truce is playing Saturday, which is the 30th, with Funerary and Hellbender. Shout out Hellbender. Noah and Parker are in that band, and I love them.
Okay, sick. I was not familiar with that one, but I want to check out that band. I'm familiar with Funerary, but not as familiar with that.
Well, yeah, Hellbender, I think this is their first show. I think this is the first thing that they've played together, and I've heard the recordings, the demos. They fucking rip. It's gonna sick. Be they're the grindcore band I was talking about earlier.
Steve's told me about them.
Okay,
cool.
Everybody in that band is a total sweetheart too, so
awesome.
It'll be fun to see them all play and have a good time. Do you have any other projects people should check out?
I'm always doing all sorts of different things and overstretching what I should be doing with my time. I play and do kind of like a post-punk and goth type electronic band with very synth heavy, all drum machines, things like that. That's called Angel Maker, Angel Hyphen Maker, not to be confused with, there's another band with that name. I'm playing a show in Lafayette with that group. It's kind of like a solo thing, but I also have like, my buddy plays bass live, but I kind of just make it all on my own at home. Doing a show with them, Lafayette, on Halloween day, on the 31st. Sick. So that'll be a cool, it's going to be like a goth dance party type thing in Lafayette.
I better edit this fast so we can get it out.
Yeah, that's kind of my main thing. I also do techno too, under my name Normald. I have a cassette that my buddies put out too for Normald, and I'm doing a live show for that with cassette release November 6th.
How do you spell Normald?
With a K. And this is a funny, it's just everything I do is a bunch of jokes. My internet name used to be, when I was in Wounded Knee, it used to be Chris Knee, like a goofy punk name, like, you know, Billy Bondage Pan or whatever like that. So like, because I was in that band, I was like, yeah, that's Chris Knee. And somewhere along the line, I made some sort of joke about, because I'm, as you probably are as well, in a lot of like Facebook groups that are hyper specific about screamo, emo, Midwest, you know, Midwest emo, all of that was like, everyone was super hyper specific with their groups. I'm like, no, don't post Youth of Today here. This is this kind of group. So I was like, I'm going to start a group about being normal, just being a normal person that's like not interesting. And this is like the most bland thing. And my buddy, David Chastain, plays in this post-rock band, Shipwreck Carpathos, took that and like actually did it. He actually made a group. It's like, this is a normal group for normal people. So I changed my name to Normal because of that. Right. And I was like, I'm just Chris Normal. I'm not Chris Knee anymore. I'm just a normal guy. I'm not into anything specific. And I just kept that as my internet name for the longest time. And then when I started doing techno and electronic music, I was getting into modular Eurorack. So, and if, as you know, in engineering, patch bays and things like that, from mastering, normaled
right,
the signal through. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to take that. I'm actually going to make that my name and release music under it that's entirely instrumental, electronic, and dark techno.
Yeah, a man of many talents.
I just keep doing stuff, sticking it, throwing it till it sticks.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty, not common trend, but I see that happening with a lot of artists over the past like 5 to 10 years, just people doing like a really wide range of genres. And you know, I like, obviously that happened pre-internet and stuff too, but just like having it documented on the internet and making it so much more accessible to other people has been super cool to see, like people making things that you would not expect out of them based off what they've released before. Is one of the best parts of internet music, in my opinion.
Definitely. And I think it's so much cooler now that like all of that kind of blends together in shows. Whereas when I started going to shows, you would be going to this type of show. You would be going to this type of hardcore show at this venue, and this venue only has this type of music and things like that. Now it's so blended together, it's more interesting to see like a noise artist. And my band's played with a lot of hip hop artists too, and it's the same energy. So it like makes sense and translate. Everyone there likes both types of music, or all different types of music. So seeing it all happen together is so much more interesting now than when I started going to shows when I was younger. Yeah.
Have you seen the like kind of like chiptune screamo stuff lately?
I have not, but I can imagine.
It's bands like Your Arms Are My Cocoon, Hecra, stuff like that. It's just like basically very digitally influenced screamo.
Okay.
Is how I'd phrase it. And it's really cool. It's a weird genre that like I do not think could exist without the internet.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, definitely. Actually one of the recommended albums on the Midwest Screamo page right now is White Eagle by Hecra, and it's really, cool. really good.
I'm gonna check it out. That I've never heard of that. I've kind of fallen out of I'm not in as many of those Facebook groups anymore. I went normal.
Well, you know, I think the youngins like me aren't as active on Facebook either.
Yeah.
I learned about it through Twitter mostly. Although Hecra, Hecra doesn't even have like social media pages. White Eagle got released because the person who writes all the music like posted it on 4chan for feedback or something. And like, as far as I know, that's the only internet account they have.
That's cool though. Like that's, I like when that things become viral from like weird corners of the internet.
Yeah. Well, and I think, I mean, I'm assuming they just got such positive feedback. And that album's just so good too. Mm-hmm. Like it's like a, pitch shifted screams, and the part writing is like the most insane guitar part writing I've ever heard. So big fan. Check out the Midwest Screamo recommended page. It's the first page you open when you go to midwestscreamo.com. So yeah, I think that about wraps things up. But before we go, what are your parting words of advice for listeners?
Parting words. Don't do anything you don't like. There's a lot of really cool things to do. And don't waste any time doing something that sucks. Whether it be a job, easier said than done in that case sometimes, but relationship, band, whatever. If you don't enjoy yourself doing something, don't do it. And there's so many cool things to do, especially when you get involved in communities like DIY and you know, punk, screamo, hardcore. There's so many different cool things to experience. Don't waste your time doing something that sucks.
Yeah Life is beautiful.
You could say that.
Yeah. Well, Chris, thanks so much for coming on. It's been great talking to you. I've really enjoyed it. I know the listeners will too.
I hope so.
Oh, they definitely will. Yeah. I'll talk to you again soon.
Awesome. Take it easy.
You too.